Call the Senate Finance Committee together. Today is February 24th, the last Friday in February, thankfully. Please silence your cell phones. It's 2 minutes after 9 o'clock. We have Co-Chairman Stedman, Co-Chairman Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, and Senator Wilson is away on other business. So today we have a presentation on the broadband. With us is the director of the Alaska Broadband, Thomas Lockyer. Please come forward, introduce yourself, maybe give some of your credentials and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. My name is Thomas Lockyer. I'm the director of the Alaska Broadband Office. I come to the office with 24 years of experience in telecom. I worked at a local utility, Anchorage Telephone Utility. I worked at a private company, Alaska Communications, and I've worked at a co-op, Arctic Slope Telephone Association Cooperative, Inc. I have lots of experience with not only the engineering side, but the finance side and the marketing side, as well as urban, rural, and ultra-rural built. I was selected to be the director of the broadband office last September, and the broadband office is made up of myself, an administrative specialist, a tribal liaison, that's Melissa Kukash. Matrixed into us is a senior project manager from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. That's Lisa Von Bargen. We are looking for a connectivity manager. And as we get further down the road, you can see we have the opportunity to take advantage of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs grant staff, rather than trying to recreate that within the broadband office. It just made more sense to leverage those assets and get a larger group. As part of House Bill 363, and we are very grateful to Representative Edgman for sponsoring that and the legislature for passing that, we have an oversight advisory board that has been selected through the governor's boards and commissions, or office of boards and commissions. And you can see on the screen, the members are very diverse and statewide and bring to it a lot of experience. We will be soliciting the board for some very acute items that we have right now, one of which is as we do our initial proposal or the grants that we need to develop, in looking at the operations and maintenance side, we will have them help with the labor costs, equipment costs, and so we'll tap their experience to get that information. The broadband office funding that we will be passing through, with the exception of a small administrative cost, comes from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Of the $65 billion contemplated for broadband out of that act, you can see the two that the broadband office that will come to the states are the digital equity and the broadband equity access and deployment, or BEAD. One's just over $42 billion, and the other is $640 million. As I said, there's small administrative fees that will come to the state. The rest will be a pass-through to entities to administer grants associated with them. The state has already received two of those small administrative fees. One is $568,000 associated with a digital equity development plan. And that the state is working with many partners, but primarily through Rasmussen Foundation, to get that plan written. And then the BEAD planning grant funding of $5 million carries the broadband office through from 11/15 through of last year through to the conclusion of the infrastructure being built. On the digital equity side, the plan is being developed for 8 affected populations. You can see those populations are in the upper box. The lower box is the funding associated with digital equity, and we have already received our near $600,000 planning grant award. The capacity grant will also come to the state, and we'll be using the same formula funding that the planning grant used. And then the competitive grants are for anyone in the state and anyone in the nation to apply. And I anticipate that various state agencies will be applying for those grant fundings to engage in a digital equity training.
Are you going to be covering, the other funds that are available throughout the that have been awarded directly and not going through the state of Alaska, so we can get a better picture of exactly how much funds are going to be available for broadband construction?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chairman. I will be with a sum total number and an identification of the projects, but in this program, I won't be listing each one out.
Okay. Maybe if you could provide that to me, and then I could disseminate that. So I think it's very important that this committee get an idea of the big 5,000-foot level view of what's happening with broadband, not just what's happening with state funding.
Thank you, Chairman. I will.
Please proceed.
On the broadband equity access and deployment side, the allocation is just over $42 billion nationwide. Each state gets $100 million of that, and each territory gets $25 million off the top. Then 10% of the 42 is allocated for high cost. There's a formula that will be used to determine how the high cost 10% gets allocated. That formula has not been developed yet by the National Telecom and Information Administration. And then the remaining funds will be allocated based on the unserved locations in Alaska over the total unserved locations in the United States.
So when you're talking about high cost in Alaska, are you talking about construction or high cost of operations or high cost of subscriptions?
They haven't come up with the formula yet, and so it was high cost to build and to service, and it one follows from the other, and so that. But there's going to be a formula that they're going to determine, and the National Telecommunication and Information Administration has selected a company called CostQuest to work on that. We're not privy to how those calculations are being developed, but we have been talking with the delegation to make sure that those, as much as possible, take into account the special circumstances and the very high cost nature of Alaska, all of Alaska. The
Senator Bishop, before you proceed, we do have in the audience, Senator Giesel has been here since the beginning of the meeting.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Chairman, Mr. Walker, well, you've got, you're probably drinking out of a fire hose. And we have, maybe 184 unserved and underserved communities. And one of the things that we were hearing last year to the chairman's comments previously We had individuals from rural communities coming in and telling us about internet bills in the tune of $400 to $900 a month when they're doing when we were shut down with COVID. And is that going to be a goal to make sure we drive those costs down? That's where I'm coming from a cost standpoint.
Through the chair. Thank you, Senator. Absolutely. Affordability is one of the key functions of this program.
Senator Bishop. Thank you, Senator Bishop. Please proceed.
The disbursements will go first to the unserved locations. Then that is can't receive 25 megabits down and 3 megabits up. And the shorthand for that is that 25 down is pulling stuff from the internet to watch YouTube or Hulu or consuming that way. And the up speed is posting pictures of my cars and family and dogs. So one's moving stuff to the internet, the other is consuming from the internet. And generally we find that home usage has a much heavier pull down than push up. The second level is underserved, and they can reach 25 megabits per second down, but can't reach 100 megabits per second down. And then if there's funding left over from those two, it is to hit the unserved community anchor institutions. And those are considered unserved if they don't receive 1 gig over 1 gig. So a significantly different number there. And then after that is the unserved in areas that are considered served. We're finding what we call donut holes, where in, I'll use Anchorage as an example, the whole Rabbit Creek area, the lower Rabbit Creek area, is completely unserved. But because it's a small portion of Anchorage, and the metric is that if 80% of the community is served, then that is considered served, then they would be fourth under those three items that you see on the screen.
Do you have a map of the communities throughout the state of Alaska that are under this category, under less than 25 megabits for the unserved and underserved communities? Can we get a, maybe not a map, but a list of those communities that the members can look at?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do. And it's two slides from now. So what I've pulled up now is the schedule that we're following. The dark gray arrows there are the three primary benchmarks that have come from the National Telecom and Information Administration. The first was the awarding of our grant on 11/15. The red line up there is approximately today. It's actually 3 days ago. And when we got our grant notification on November 15th of last year, it started a 270-day shot clock. So we had 270 days to come up with a five-year action plan. That action plan is not what we will do with the funding. It is what would it take to build out completely all of Alaska. So we are well into that process, and we have a goal to submit that to the National Telecom and Information Administration by 6/15. There are two main reasons we want to do that. The second arrow is the short for National Telecom and Information Administration is NTIA. The NTIA funding occurs on the 30th of June. We want to show them what our number is before they do that allocation. And secondly, we want to be the leader that they read ours first and we lead, so that when California comes in, they get compared to us rather than us being compared to California. So we're being very aggressive, primarily to get that number out to them. So when they make that allocation, they know what number we need.
And in developing that plan, what involvement does the advisory board have in the process?
The advisory board's primary role will be to review that plan before it's submitted, and then they will have a larger role in the initial proposal that kicks off on June 30th.
Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for being here. Where within this timeline does the mapping, I forget, they've got a special name for it, but mapping who's served with what speeds, basically house by house, where does that fall on this timeline? I know it's started.
Through the chair. Thank you, Senator. It's called the fabric mapping, and it has been ongoing. The first iteration of the fabric mapping was dropped by the FCC on June 30th of last year. Then the telecommunications providers and the state had an opportunity to challenge that, which we did. The second iteration of that fabric map dropped on December 30th, and there has been a significant outcry to the output. Effectively, it looks like the National Telecommunications and Information Administration over here is going to be make funding decisions on an Federal Communications Commission map over here that have a little bit of a disconnect. And so the Federal Communications Commission map is a beta map. It's only up the second issue. And it still will be revised over time. And what we heard was that the NTI, the National Telecom and Information Administration, was going to make a decision based on that map. And we knew that it had some issues. And we continue to work with both the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, and the NTIA to make sure that all of the broadband serviceable locations, they're called the houses and small businesses, that are valid are on that map for that, especially the unserved ones, to make sure that that gets into the funding allocation that happens on June 30th.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that obviously isn't going to make a difference if an entire community is unserved, right? We know that. How much does a delay in getting that map right affect the rest of your planning?
Through the chair, I apologize. Thank you, Senator. The delay in the map doesn't affect the plan, but affects the funding.
Can you explain that?
Yes. So the unserved and served denomination, if there's 10 houses and 5 are unserved, and nationwide there's 50, then it's going to be 5 over 50. If in actuality in Alaska 7 are unserved, then it's 7 over 50, and there's a higher allocation that will come to Alaska. And so we are working very closely to make sure that every single unserved broadband serviceable location is recognized by the FCC to fairly optimize the funding that's going to be allocated on June 30th. Did that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Keel, thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Once that allocation has been made, we have 180 days to submit our initial proposal, and that initial proposal is for how we will be running the grants that will pass through the money to whoever the grantee, sub-grantee will be to build, operate, and maintain the systems. The broadband office is agnostic to those applicants. In other words, we're not just focused on telecoms. We are encouraging anybody who has the wherewithal and can show the longevity of sustainability, affordability, and scalability into the future to apply for those grants. We have, we are working on those already. We will loop in the advisory board to help shape those. And we have a very aggressive schedule to submit that to the National Telecom and Information Administration on 7/31 and or 149 days early. Again, we want to make sure that all other states are graded by the innovation and the creativity of Alaska rather than us being graded by someone else or against someone else.
Additionally, the sooner you get it in, the sooner it gets approved. Once it is approved, the National Telecom and Information Administration will release at least 20% of the funds to then have the Alaska Broadband Office release those to the subgrantees. And those subgrantees will have to be in communities that are 80% of them are unserved of the locations, in addition to communities that are, as a whole, less than 150% of the poverty line. Once that approval is done, it starts the final proposal that's actually running the grant program, picking folks who will be the subgrantees. And then once that's submitted to the National Telecom and Information Administration, they will release the remainder of the funding. We don't know what that later timeline is. Our best estimate is early next year. Getting back to the mapping of served, unserved, and underserved, looking at Alaska, we did an evaluation of the communities that are served. This is based on the telecommunications providers' advertised rates in all of those communities and what they believe they can do. We further looked at why that was, and in every single case, they're on fiber systems. So those orange lines are all the fiber systems that exist in Alaska, from Quintillion up north to MTA going out the Yukon to the two GCI and two Alaska Communications fibers going south, and the GCI fiber going over to Leavelock. We looked at
So I have a question. You say the orange line going around to Nome is Quintillion. I thought Quintillion was not a provider necessarily, but building their fiber. Can you explain, are they a provider or not a provider?
Quintillion is a retailer and a wholesaler, so they are both. Okay. Thank you, John. The light blue lines that I've just added to the map are the microwave systems. And while the microwave systems are robust and they do offer some broadband, they do not meet the National Telecom and Information Administration's threshold of 100 over 20. So those locations are considered unserved.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a couple quick questions. I see we got the four fiber optic lines coming down the Pacific. Is there any pigtails off of those lines that aren't attached so we could run them into the islands in the southeast, or are there non-existent as far as pigtails? And then also, Mr. Chairman, I think it'd be really nice on these slides if we had a backup, you know, the list of the communities, because when I look at southeast, it's kind of all smashed together and hard to see. And we've got a lot of microwave down here. And then we've got Prince of Wales Island, which even gets more complicated. So that'll help me understand the region of the state, please.
I brought that up earlier. He said it was coming up later, but I think a specific map, a specific list of those communities that are unserved and underserved would be important for the committee to review. So are we going to see that later, or we can provide it later?
I don't have the list in the – thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have the list in the presentation, but I do have the list. It is posted on our website, and I will make sure that I call it out and get it to you.
Thank you. Senator Stedman?
Just a quick one, Mr. Chairman. It would be nice to get it in Excel.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Stedman. It is in Excel.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
I've added blue pins to the map, and the blue pins are the projects that are currently been let by the federal government, primarily the National Telecom
and Information Administration through the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program and through the United States Department of Agriculture's Reconnect and Community Connect programs. This gets to the understanding of the projects that are out there and how much has come to the state. The sum total of the projects for all of those blue dots is about $750 million. And so there are several projects. The C-Link in the southeast is through the United States Department of Agriculture's Reconnect program. The Fort Yukon down to Tanana and Dillingham up to Bethel is through the Tribal Broadband Connectivity. Fort Yukon to Tanana is Doyon in partnership with Alaska Communications. Dillingham up to Bethel is Bethel Native Corporation in partnership with GCI. Going north of Bethel, there's a program that is being done by Chilista in partnership with Alaska Communications. So it's good to see these programs in partnership of both the Native organizations as well as the telecommunications providers.
So the projects that are in blue are both unserved and underserved communities?
Thank you, Chairman. Correct. But they will be served when these projects are completed. Yes. I've added a lavender line and a slightly different color blue line to cover the fiber that will be added with these projects once they are completed and the microwaves that will be added once they're completed.
So can you get to the committee a list of the all of these that you alluded to earlier? I think there was four or five of them, and when the contracts are going to be completed. Is that information that you have access to?
Thank you, Chairman. I have access to the list of the programs. I don't have the information from the Native corporations and the telecommunications providers as to when they're going to be completed.
Thank you. So isn't that important information for the people of the state of Alaska to know when the whole state is going to be connected?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is important information for the state. And each of the programs has a fixed timeline. What I don't know is when within that timeline the companies and the Native corporations will be completed with their projects. So I can do an estimate that if it's a five-year timeline, it'll be no later than 5 years. But I don't know the specific dates. That's something they keep as they're building.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lochner, thanks for pointing out some of the Native corporations and the people that have taken it unto themselves to try and serve the people within their region. But are you familiar with, or what's going on with the working relationships, since they both seem to be providing retail, wholesale, whatever else, where you've got smaller tribal entities as compared to some of the multi-million dollar big corporations like GCI? How is their working relationship since they're both competing against each other?
In terms of I can only speak to it in terms of the grants that will be coming out of the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment.
I guess that's exactly what I'm asking for. What is the – there's? I've been made aware that there has been some attempt to go ahead and make it so that some of these smaller entities are – don't have the access to get to the $42 billion or whatever you had here with the amount of money that's out there to try and serve rural Alaska. Is that true?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator. That is not true. What we do want to make sure that these programs aren't just capital up front and then 5 years from now they're in disrepair because there's not the economics to continue. And I was working with tribal broadband connectivity through the National Telecommunication, when I was with ASTAC, I was helping other Native organizations with their programs as well. My CEO at the time, Jens Lipenex, loaned me out. So I was working with one in the interior, and he said, I want 300 over 300 for $99. And when we plugged in the operational cost of that, that was going to be, it spit out a negative 2,400% margin. So it was going to be underwater day one. And so then he backed off and said, okay, how about 100 over 20 for $299? So we plugged that in, and it was still negative, but it was much closer to zero. Mm-hmm. At that point, it made sense for that small community to get together with the six other small communities around that community to band together, because then you have economy of scale. You have a technician that, like ASTAC's a fantastic model. They've got a technician that serves four on one side and four on the other side, and they just rove it around, that technician around, and you defer that cost over more revenue coming in.
With all due respect, I think that's a whole different ball game up there, because you've got people that have more affluent lifestyle that are served by Aztec than otherwise, and you've got poor people down on the Yukon and Kuskokwim areas that don't have that lifestyle. But that's not my question. My question has to do with what I talked about before, where the funding was getting in. Are you familiar with Alaska Tribal Spectrum?
Through the chair, yes, sir, I am.
I've been told that they are having inhibitions put in their place to try and get access to some of the funding, the federal funding that's out there, to try and provide some of these smaller communities with some kind of internet system. We're specifically talking about some of the bigger providers and wholesalers and otherwise.
Through the chair. Thank you, Senator. We encourage Alaska Tribal Spectrum to submit grant opportunities within the BEAD funding. We will not be excluding anybody, and we will be encouraging everybody to come with a proposal and then also the economic model.
Okay.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Please proceed.
All right. So then the charter for the Alaska Broadband Office is the remaining unserved and underserved villages. If I remove the served, the projects, and all the infrastructure, this is the charter of the broadband office, is all of those villages. Part of the...
How many villages are listed on this map? It looks...
196. So 184 unserved and 12 underserved. Mr. Chairman, sorry. That part of the notice of funding opportunity that we received says, in as much as possible, the state has to, in its grant program, leverage the infrastructure that's already in place. So I've put that back on the map so that you can see the microwave and fiber infrastructure. And then what the broadband office has done is come up with a network idea. And that's the pink lines that I just added. We're loath to call it a network design because we're not technical, but we think that the systems that we have drawn throughout the state to serve every single one of the unserved and underserved locations are a reasonable way to go. And what the broadband office has done is posted this map as well as the Excel spreadsheet capital model with the ability for folks to change inputs on the broadband office's website so that folks can change it at their will. It lists the served, underserved, and the projects. So it will be the basis of that Excel spreadsheet capital model that I will be sending to the chair for dissemination.
Well, with the NITA grants that have went out to Native entities, if you
take those off of this list, do we have a map that shows what it would look like with those communities that still are not being provided service, or does a map?
Thank you, Chairman. That is this map. The communities that were awarded, like Fort Yukon down to Tanana through Rampart and Stevens Village, those are not on this map because they have been awarded through the tribal broadband connectivity through the NTIA or National Telecommunication and Information Administration. So those have been removed. You can see the villages of the North Slope have been removed because they are served. In addition, Point Lay, Kaktovik, and Anaktuvik Pass, which were the final ones, have projects that have been let. So they're not, while they're not served yet, they have been removed.
So there are 196 of these communities?
Correct.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we finish this, all the capital construction and stuff, can you give me an idea if these communities, how much faster they're going to be than if they went with Starlink? You know, Starlink, I don't know how it works up in the Delta area, but in Southeast it works very well. So can you know the comparison to that?
Yes, through the chair, and I have a slide, a couple slides down. Thank you, Senator. One of the primary grading category for the grants is an affordability category, and they don't list a price. What they list for affordability is the National Telecommunications and Information Administration said affordable is 1 gig over 1 gig. And we meet with the NTI once a week, every week, and we ask them what they thought affordable 1 gig over 1 gig service, and it's no more than $150 for 1 gig per second down, 1 gig per second up. Senator, you bring up a great point with Starlink. Starlink is a solid service in the Southeast, especially because their core birds are down there. In Alaska, they've got a lot fewer, although I met with...
Well, the southern part, the satellites go over Southeast much more frequent than they go over Barrow.
Balloons up there. we're in Alaska. Southeast is in Alaska.
I apologize, Senator. I, through the chair, over the interior of Alaska. So I misspoke.
Can you explain that then? Why Southeast is probably more gets Starlink or microwave when many of the areas in the state may be getting intermittent Starlink, but they are looking forward to fiber, which is probably going to be much faster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can. The primary band of Starlink satellites goes up to the 60th parallel. They launched, I think it's...
And can you give a community, which community is at 60th parallel?
ADAC is well covered, and then as it goes around some of the southern part of the Southeast. And the reason the remainder of the Southeast is served well is because instead of the panel pointing straight up at the satellites, it tilts up and has enough view of the ones that where the line kind of stops.
And is it fair to say that more satellites are planned for communities farther north to be added by Starlink?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I met with Starlink 2 weeks ago, and they call it their Group 2 satellites, and they are planning to have more satellites over the interior and northern part of Alaska.
And what is that time frame?
They didn't give it to me, but I'm going to – I'm sorry. Thank you. They didn't give me that date, but I'm also meeting with them in late March
and I will press them harder for that.
And can give the committee and those watching the a comparison between microwave and fiber, and Starlink being microwave?
Thank you. Yes, I can. There's, if I can draw an analogy, right? Starlink is a Chinook helicopter, a very fast Chinook helicopter, but it has a limited capacity on each one of those. They're about, the satellite's about this big, right? And they have space lasers which connect all the satellites together, which make the system go fiber-like. And they're at a low Earth orbit, which is only about, I think, 3,000 miles up, versus geosynchronous satellite orbits, which are about 34,000 miles up. And so the distance to go through to get to the Earth is a lot shorter. And at lower speeds, under 300, they have a fiber-like performance if you have enough satellites to have continuous service. That being said, fiber is more like a bullet train that's almost can be unlimited long. It has the same low latency. It can grow just on a single fiber. You can not only shoot the white light, but you can break down each color into its constituent parts and add multi-terabits of data on every color. Dense wave division multiplexing is what that's called. So you can take the red light and put a terabit on it. You can take the blue light and put a terabit on it. So it just has the ability to grow in a way that the satellite and the microwave right now don't. So I have to caveat that, because 10 years ago, satellites were slower than they are now, and that they're figuring out how to do more and more. But the difference is fiber does it now. So.
The way it was explained to me is that if you were looking for transportation and a snow machine came along and you were walking or in a dog sled, you'd say, wow, this snow machine is much better than the dog sled. But once you get in and get into the road system and you jump in a car and you say, wow, this is much better than a snow machine, you know. So many people see Starlink as something that is much improved over what they're currently receiving. But eventually, when fiber comes along, it is going to be a much improved option for many people that want faster speeds, especially those in the medical field and educational communities throughout the state. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a great analogy. I'm not going to say Starlink's a bad product. It is a good product. They just need more satellites over. There's a website called satellitemap.space, and it shows in real time every single Starlink and every single OneWeb satellite and where they are over Alaska. You can zoom right in and see. Getting back to the timeline of the five-year action plan and the initial proposal, the five-year action plan, the notice of funding opportunity, requires 13 items. Some of them were a bit repetitive, so we've condensed them down into 8 and then broke them down into these 3 broad categories. The box with the green mark is approximately where we are in completion of those items. So we are working on stepping up our outreach to make sure that we have tribal consultation and the digital equity side that we can put into the five-year action plan. Because the five-year action plan really is based on the digital equity outcomes. The way I look at it is they're giving us $42 billion, or an allocation of $42 billion, to build a pen. But the pen is useless unless somebody knows how to form letters and punctuation and paragraphs. And it becomes transformative when we can teach the user of the pen how to use it effectively to communicate. So the digital equity side is a very, very important part of the BEAD exercise.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have enough people to meet your deadlines?
Through the chair, thank you. Yes. We have not only the staff on board, but we have engaged consultants to help us.
Okay. And just a follow-up, thank you, Mr. Chairman, is I know this is five-year money, and it is probably going to maybe take us 8, 9, 10 years to build it out because, you know, you got supply constraints and you got workforce issues and all that other stuff that's slowing projects down. But my question to you is just something to keep in back of your mind for you and your group. Federal Highways has a true up every year where the money that's not allocated by other states comes into a pot and is redistributed nationally. And Alaska has always been at the forefront of being able to capture those leftover federal highway dollars. I'm just wondering, you know, this is your bailiwick and I don't live in this space, but I would be thinking about maybe some of these other states won't have executed all their funding, and as a contingency plan, maybe we can grab some more money.
And on that, with the five-year plan, is the state going to give out updates or reports to see where we are on a semi-annual or annual basis, or maybe even quarterly, since 5 years can slip by pretty quickly?
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, there is a reporting functionality to the NTIA that's very robust, and so we can share that reporting as well.
And what's the time frames?
Semi-annually.
And that is January 1st and July 1st, or what are the dates?
Thank you, Chairman. I believe it triggers on when you start. It's 6 months and then 6 months. And if I may, thank you, through the chair, Senator Bishop, we will look into that, try and get that. If I can comment on this map, there are several applications out to the different agencies. So there's the tribal broadband connectivity phase 3. There is the middle mile infrastructure fund. There is the USDA's reconnect round 4 that will be awarded in April. There's going to be a reconnect round 5. So what we're looking at is there may be several of these communities, and this may have gone to your question earlier, Mr. Chairman, is that several of these communities will turn blue. The network idea that we have come up with has a price tag of $1.88 billion. And if there are other projects that come in that will add to that $750 million we've already received, it will defer and make that number smaller so that we'll be able to reach different communities.
Please proceed. Are there any questions at this point? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the grant criteria, under the initial proposal, the notice of funding opportunity restricts the state to having 75% of all scoring be three items: the efficient use of the BEAD funding, and the way they phrase it is how big is the match. Excuse me. The affordability, and that's what I referenced earlier, where affordability is defined as 1 gigabit per second over 1 gigabit per second, and then employing fair labor practices. The second criteria is, will the work be completed by a set date? They require that criteria, but don't list what that percentage will be. A broadband office, and we'll get advice from the advisory board, that will be maybe a 0.5%. And the reason why is because, to Senator Bishop's point, projects in Alaska are difficult and can be held up by weather, can be held up by supply chain, can be, right? If you miss the barge, you're waiting a year. So we don't anticipate that being a large criteria. We are brainstorming on all other criteria, one of which I mentioned earlier is the operating cost and having an operations model that shows sustainability, affordability, and scalability. A preference for tribal and native bidders. There are scoring items and gating items. These are all listed as scoring items. There's a gating item that will be have tribal concurrence if it is not a tribal organization bidding. So that is the end of my prepared remarks.
Do you have Senator Bishop?
Thank you. Can you repeat that last thing? You said concurrence?
Right.
Can you just repeat that question? I mean that statement, then I've got then I can form my question.
Through the chair, thank you. What we want to make sure is that the affected village has said, yes, this group has talked to us. We believe in what they're doing. We're on board with what they're doing.
Thank you.
Regarding the broadband advisory board, it seems to be, it is a large board. Do they have a schedule of when they are going to be meeting for the next year? And when did they meet? Did they have their organizational meeting already?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The organizational meeting will happen the week of the 21st of March. It is out to the board to fill in what's called a doodle, where folks can put in the optimal times and we'll find a time that meets everybody's needs. And that will be the organizational meeting for the rest.
Has the location been identified?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe it will be virtual.
Any additional questions? This is very complex with all the different players and the different time frames and the different available services, microwave versus fiber. The goal, I believe, is to get every Alaskan connected with whatever service they desire. But the issue that Senator Olson brought up, you know, it's one thing to build a car. It's another thing to pay for gas to drive the car. And the users are a broad spectrum of Alaskans. Many reasons that we have unserved and underserved communities in the state is because they live in some of the highest energy cost areas of the state. And how are they going to be able to afford putting gas in the car?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are two ways. One, the broadband office will, as part of its evaluation, have a target affordable number, and that will be anywhere between $75 and $150. And then also, depending on the bandwidth or the speed, also the Federal Communications Commission has what's called the Affordable Connectivity Program, which is a $75 subsidy for every internet household. And what they've done is they've determined that all of Alaska is 100% native. So non-native, it's $30. Native, it's $75. So all of Alaska gets the benefit of that $75 subsidy if you hit certain criteria on food stamps, under 150% of the poverty line, there's several criteria on WIC. So if they do, they can get that offset against the price of their gas. So.
I think that's a critical component that many people haven't had the answer to. So I think once you have the program operating, that the people of Alaska can utilize the internet, and hopefully we will be the most most connected in the vast area of the state of Alaska, which we are have the least density of population. Are there any final questions that members have at this point? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lochner, as you look down the board of directors that are there for the broadband that you're trying to go ahead and give out to rural Alaska, there's only one name there that I see that's not on the road system. How often do you achieve? They were just appointed recently. How long are they appointed for, and when does their term run out?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Olson. They're appointed for a 3-year term, mm-hmm. and they were appointed by the governor's boards and commissions. I had no call in how they chose them.
Any other additional comments, questions? Do you have any closing remarks?
If I may, Chairman, yes. The Affordable Connectivity Program is open now, and so we encourage everybody to take advantage of it now. And we hear about the $400. Even with $75 off $400, it helps some, right? And so if folks can take advantage of it now, we encourage them to.
Thank you for that presentation. There's more to come, and I think the committee probably will be interested in, at least on an annual basis, an update, if not more frequent. The meeting, this meeting is completed today. On Monday, February 27th at 9 a.m. is our next meeting. We'll be taking up confirmations of governor's appointees, Adam Crum, commissioner designee for revenue, and the Medicaid enrollment and spending forecast for FY23 through FY43. Just a note, the three members of the chairman's met yesterday, and there has been a marked increase in COVID in the building. There is no reporting procedures, but it was determined that because of the importance of this committee, the starting Monday once a week, the members of the finance committee, their staff and the support staff are going to be required to have a COVID test once a week on Mondays to see if we can at least have a little higher standard in this building because of the importance of this committee to the process. Senator Stedman.
A quick note on that. I think the three co-chairs would like the test completed by 9 a.m. start of the meeting Monday, not close of business Monday. So when you come in, just please do your test, and we'll also be monitoring the amount of public in the room and try to do what we can to keep the committee process running smoothly.
There has been concern by our support staff, some of the staff of committee members. So I think that at least for this room and this committee, it's an important step. We're not saying that we're recommending this to any other committees, but for our committee, we believe that this is the right action and the right step to take. With that, we stand adjourned.